The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
So imagine for a second, last day of your job, new boss has been hired, you decide, you know, it's time to move on to greener pastures. You and your old boss had a pretty good working relationship. The two of you collaborated on several projects together. And, you know, you even saw your way through a few different scandals. Possibly the biggest potential scandal was, after learning of your boss's imminent forced departure, the two of you gathered those most loyal and planned to undermine the next boss. But on your way out the door, you had a creepy feeling. Something was growing inside of you. Have I done enough? Did I do everything to complete the plan and cover our tracks? So just before you lose access to the corporate email server, you compose yourself an email. You know it's going to be found by the incoming regime. You can't access it in just a couple of hours, so there's no reason to write this email, except you know it's going to be found. It's a last-ditch effort at undermining the new boss, but more importantly, it implies that you did nothing wrong. You hit send, you get up, you walk out the door for the very last time. This is what, in a nutshell, appears to be what Susan Rice, the former national security advisor, did just before she walked out of the White House on Inauguration Day. Yesterday, Senators Grassley and Graham sent a letter to Susan Rice asking her to explain, quote, an unusual email, end quote, that they found was sent by her on her last day of work. The email was sent to herself via the NSC's official server on January 20th, but it was explaining a meeting that took place on January 5th. The email describes an interaction between Obama, law enforcement, and the intelligence community, and how the outgoing administration was considering withholding information regarding the Russia investigation from the incoming Trump team. Forced in, not once, but twice, were comments that her former boss allegedly made that he stressed to the need to do this absolutely by the book, and that he was absolutely, definitively, and definitely, absolutely, positively not trying to insert himself into law enforcement activities. Whew, glad we have a record of that. First of all, why did Obama feel the need to tell the FBI to, quote, go by the book twice in such a short time? Aren't the FBI's investigations always done by the book? Isn't that implied? Why did Rice write that Obama made it clear that he's not trying to influence the investigation? Could it possibly be that Obama, Rice, and the entire outgoing administration were engaging in an off-the-books operation to smear Donald Trump? Well, here's something that the rest of the press, including the New York Times, will not tell you. We found it in the New York Times. We're just going to bring these two pieces together. We found a story that ran March 1st in the New York Times. We happen to remember the headline, Obama Administration Rushed to Preserve Intelligence of Russia Election Hacking. This was a pretty damning article that was released back in March, and it implied that the Trump team was in danger of scuttling valuable information that would prove Russia interfered in the election. The article goes on to explain that the Obama administration proceeded to launch an operation of leaks to Congress, leaks to other agencies, leaks all over the place. But that story ran in the New York Times almost a year ago. I'm sure the reporters have, better things to do than read old news and maybe see if it ties into new news. Unfortunately for them, we have plenty of time on our hands. If you reread the article, the vast majority of information that is in the Times claims that Obama was leaking, and it sounds like it came from the same place, what we now know as the Steele dossier. Was the former president and his staff engaging in a leak operation of opposition research paid for by Hillary Clinton and the DNC? Did the FBI know about this? Was this email from Susan Rice a last-ditch effort at covering their tracks? If just one of these questions is yes, well, forget Watergate. This will indeed be the biggest scandal in our nation's history.
It's Tuesday, February 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, Stu, I'm trying to find a better answer than she's covering tracks. Can you come up? Have you heard anyone come up with a legitimate reason on why she would have written this memo?
No, though I think that's always a risky way of looking at a story.
Sure. You know? I'm not saying that we condemn her. I'm saying that we look into it. I'm trying to. I have not been able to find an innocent reason.
Yeah, and I think the suspicion is super high. I mean, I think you read that email, it just reads as a terrible attempt to cover your ass, is what it says.
It's horrible. Do you happen to have the whole... Let me see if I have it.
But, I mean, I think we have to, as we do here, as we've all engaged in this many times over the years, we want to hear what her side is. I want to know. I'm not going to jump to every conclusion.
Do you think
it feels very easy in this case.
Do you think she might have written this because of a YouTube video?
Yes, I do think a YouTube video must have been involved. I mean, she's not a trustworthy source in the first place. She was someone that has been criticized correctly by the right for her role in that particular cover-up. In the Benghazi thing, you know, blaming it on a video. That was her, if you don't remember.
And she knew the truth.
But she has been blamed for other things.
That she didn't do.
For example, the unmasking situation, which was she got a lot of heat from conservative media, seemed really bad. And then the Trump administration said, no, she didn't do it. It was actually not bad. She followed protocol. The Trump administration said that. So, you know, again, you want to step back, you want to look at this and take all the information in, but this is a first sign of something that looks particularly bad.
Okay, so this is the memo. Let me read the memo to you. On January 5th, following a briefing by the IC leadership on Russia hacking during the 2016 presidential election, President Obama had a brief follow-on conversation with FBI Director Jim Comey and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates in the Oval. Vice President Biden and I were also present. President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities, quote, by the book. The president stressed that he is not asking about, initiating, or instructing anything from law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would by the book. Wow, that's an incredible first paragraph, isn't it?
It was a by-the-book first paragraph, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'll tell you that. From a national security perspective, however, President Obama says he wanted to be sure that as we engage with the incoming team, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. President asked Comey to inform him if anything changes in the next few weeks that it should affect how we share classified information with the incoming team. Comey said he would. Now, let me ask you a question. Why did she write this memo about a meeting that happened on January 5th? 2 weeks later, she writes it as she's leaving the office, her office. She's not coming back. She leaves it on her servers, which she will no longer have access to. I mean, this is the worst cover-up I've ever seen, if it is a cover-up. I mean, it's so obvious. Wait, you wrote yourself a note? Well, why? You couldn't get on the servers within the hour you were off the servers. Why did you write this note?
It's like you didn't show up for work 1 week, and then you decided to just write in and say, I have to remind myself that I didn't clock in to work for the past 3 days, but I got to make sure when I go back in, I tell my supervisors that there was an error of me clocking in. Why would you email?
Why would you do that?
Especially if you had no access to your email after.
I mean, you're not reminding yourself of anything.
No.
You're obviously leaving this as a breadcrumb trail for somebody.
Right. And it seems to be specifically designed to make sure Obama is clear, right? Like Obama, he was the one saying it was by the book. So if someone, let's just say a Susan Rice or someone else is seen to be doing something that doesn't look so great. Mm-hmm. On record, you have Barack Obama with contemporaneous notes, and we know how
important
powerful. They're very important.
Very important.
It would have there would be record of he was the one that wanted to do it right, and we went the wrong direction.
Gosh darn it.
Yep.
How did we do that when he was so darn clear with us? Ugh. Here's the other thing. Again, if we go back to the New York Times a year ago, what that story was saying was that Obama and the Obama administration were leaking information, specifically leaking information that members of the Trump campaign were meeting over in Russia. They were having secret meetings in Russia. Well, there is no other source that we know of other than the Steele dossier for that one piece of information. Now, when this came out in March of last year, nobody tied this together. But now, when we see that she is saying, you know, we have to do everything by the book, and we have to make sure that we are careful on which information we share. The New York Times said that the Obama administration was sharing with people information about secret meetings. So was the administration using the Steele dossier to leak to the press stories that could hurt Donald Trump? I think the answer to that one is probably yes, in seeing that the New York Times verified that they had leaked some information. They were leaking the Steele dossier, because that is the only place where you find that piece of information that we know of.
Right. And there's different parts of that that we've discussed, in that, you know, you might say, if you, let's say, don't like Donald Trump, you might say, okay, look, the Steele dossier, we've seen parts of that look really shady, but Steele was a respected intelligence source. And the fact that they would look into something that he suggested they look into is not actually all that crazy. The problem with it is when it's something that's funded by the DNC and it's something that comes in as opposition research, that you're weaponizing the intelligence services at that point. Because if you're following up those things, imagine how that could be abused and may have been abused here. But I mean, can you imagine setting a precedent where it's okay that a Democrat could or a Republican could fund research that goes to the sitting president, and then they use that BS to go open up investigations to catch God knows what, even if it has nothing to do with the initial tip? That's a really bad precedent to set. It feels very banana republic, right?
Oh, it's, look, I've never understood why Ford pardoned Nixon, because it makes everybody look like there was some more stuff to it. And so why don't we do that? Why are people like Mike Lee? Because this is a question I asked Mike Lee. Mike, why are you not pushing for jail time for presidents if they really violate the law? And he said it's a scary balance, Glenn. And I didn't understand this at first until he really sat down with me. He said, here's the problem. If you set that precedent, then what will happen is the other side will then try to do it to your guy. And then you fall into the banana republic. You cannot use, you have to be very, very careful that we don't send people to jail unless it is truly high crimes and it is so clear. Otherwise, it's going to look like every other place that you have a challenger. Oh, well, look at this guy. I'm going to investigate him because I've heard X, Y, and Z. He needs to go to jail. You get rid of your challengers and you get rid of your ex-presidents. And he said, we've got to be very careful on that. So I agree with him that there are people that will weaponize our government. That's what this looks like it could be. Is the government had been weaponized by the Obama administration.
The only thing I can think of with the Susan Rice memo that would clear her at this moment, and again, we don't have to think of every reason. Maybe there's something we're not thinking of. But if she was the type of person, and this is something that they've talked about with Comey, that he was that very intent on doing notes every day. If she sent herself that type of email every day, that just outlined all of the meetings that she had, it might not be out of the norm.
But she didn't do this on the day. She did this the last day she was in office.
Right, but
two weeks after the meeting.
The question, though, is does she do this
from time to time
routinely? Is this a routine thing where she's constantly, like, for the record, emailing herself notes from specific meetings? I don't know that it clears her, but it would make it, you know, that might be a defense, a potential defense. Though we've heard no word of that yet. So, you know, that's still down the road. But that's the only thing I could even come up with. Why would you email this? And again, 2 weeks after the fact, still doesn't explain it.
Yeah, well, it does if you found out. I mean, at first you thought it was a problem, and then you found out that it was really just a YouTube video.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's true. Then, yeah, because then you'd have to make sure you updated
2 weeks later.
Right, just a couple weeks after when you remember, because a lot of times you'd forget for a couple weeks.
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. It's Glenn Beck and Stu, our executive producer.
Who's very sad today.
Very sad?
Very sad.
Why very sad?
There's terrible news coming out of the Washington Post.
Oh, boy.
Mohammed Quais, he fled his home in the United States in 2015 and headed to Islamic State territory in Syria and Iraq.
Oh,
because
so
he was
ISIS?
Well, yeah, he was curious about life in the group's self-declared caliphate.
Curious.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Quote, I would see people from all around the world leaving their countries and going to live in this state. It was kind of interesting.
I bet it was.
That's how I looked at it, I know.
Crucifixions are interesting.
However, Glenn, yeah. This is where it gets sad.
Oh, boy.
Because it's not the sad part is not an American going over and wanting to kill a bunch of people and behead Christians.
Right.
The sad part is this.
Yeah.
What he found did not live up to the hype.
Oh, my gosh. There were fewer executions and beheadings? No, what?
Surprisingly, not that. He was tasked with running errands such as grocery shopping.
Oh, my gosh.
Taking out the trash at his Islamic State house.
Not an American.
And caring for wounded fighters.
Oh, my.
He eventually became, quote, frustrated with waiting, end quote, for military training. According to FBI special agent who testified during the trial, he ended up fleeing and was captured in Iraq. The headline, Glenn, is devastating for all of us.
Oh, boy.
A study has found that Americans who join ISIS are disappointed by the experience.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
If you can't trust the excitement of a nice little ISIS vacay.
I am sad. I wonder if we should put them down out of their misery.
You know, that's
I mean, I'm just
proposal.
Saying they came over. Mm-hmm. They were going to fight against us. They were disappointed in that. I say we give them the chance to face our military
because they wanted military training. And that's part of
that's
military.
Part of the military training. I tell you what, we're going to put you down on the ground someplace and we'll give you a gun. Run. And
Or don't.
You can fight back, but I'm just going to...
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Glenn, many of the Americans who traveled to Syria and Iraq to join ISIS wound up coming back because, quote, life in the jihadist-held territory did not live up to their expectations.
Oh, man. I thought it was a paradise. Are we letting them back in? Does the story say that? Are we letting them back in?
They're going to prison, luckily.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
Oh my gosh.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck program.
Time for a racist update. We have yet found another racist in the Trump administration. What a surprise. It's Jeff Sessions. I mean, who didn't see that coming?
Include his middle name, Jeff Racist Sessions.
Thank you very much, Stu.
This bastard.
You would not believe what he said. If I may paraphrase, He said, I think we have to take all of these N-words, round them up,
yep,
and set them on fire.
Direct quote. Except he didn't say N-words. He used the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say that. But
and not the A-S at the end. He went all the way.
Really?
All the way. That's how I took it, at least. Now, he didn't say that word.
Well, it was a dog whistle.
Right, yes.
It was a dog whistle.
I translated it
Which is
way.
Weird, because dogs can only hear that whistle, but dogs are so racist. So racist.
Well, we learned
about Black Lab. Hello.
We learned yesterday that they don't believe in equality.
Yes.
Doggy equality.
Yes.
This is so he said the office of sheriff is a critical part of the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement.
Hello,
basically
Mr.
the N-word.
Hello, Mr. Klansman.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And luckily, Brian Schatz, a U.S. senator, was able to explain what that means. Do you know anyone who says Anglo-American heritage in a sentence? What could possibly be the purpose of saying that other than to pit Americans against each other? Mm-hmm. For the chief law enforcement officer to use a dog whistle like that is appalling. Best no vote I ever cast.
Okay, so now here's the thing. People who are racist want you to understand the context of that.
Oh, geez.
And try to understand what Jeff Sessions, who by all measures is clearly a racist, here's their excuse.
And we should point out, at this point, the word context is a dog whistle. Anyone who's trying to add context to an accusation of racism automatically is a racist.
Amen, brother.
I just want to put that out there right away.
And probably a pedophile.
Right? Yes.
Yes.
I was thinking the same
thing. And I'm not judging pedophiles. I mean, whatever you do in your own time.
It's a choice. We all have it. Okay.
All right.
So Charles C.W. Cook, just got to throw this out here, is British.
He's
so
British.
That's something you might want to know for this.
Okay. All right.
He says this to the Brian Schatz comment. Let me put this impolitely. This is moronic, and not just a little bit moronic. This is so moronic, so dim, so utterly and incandescently stupid that I frankly worry for the future of the Republic. I have been reading through these reactions for a few hours now, and I can still scarcely imagine the rank historical and legal illiteracy that it takes to hear Anglo-American in such a context and to assume it's a racial reference. Sessions could not have been more clear if he had tried. His talk was to sheriffs about sheriffs.
Huh.
His subject was the historic office that most of his audience filled.
Okay, wait. So he's talking to sheriffs about sheriffs, but more importantly, about the historic role and genesis of sheriffs.
Yes.
Okay.
His point, literally, was that, quote, since our founding, the independently elected sheriff has played a, quote, critical role within a law enforcement system that developed in England and then was adopted in America. Sheriff derives from a combination of the word shire and the word reeve. In order to make that point at the talk, he said the office of the sheriff is a critical part of the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement. It's hard to overstate just how commonly used this phrase is in this context. Within the law, Anglo-American does not mean white. It does not mean the KKK. It is not a dog whistle.
No, that's what he wants you to believe.
It's fundamental. It is used, shock, to refer to those institutions, ideals, structures, and customs that are common to England and the United States. That is, to the common legal heritage the two countries share. Most basically, it means common law. There is an identifiable Anglo-American conception of due process, which is distinct from, say, the Napoleonic system. That someone also used the word Anglo to mean white has no bearing on this. You know who has read a history book, or at least read a legal book? President Barack Obama, who, like Jeff Sessions, but unlike Senator Schatz, is a lawyer. Here's Senator Obama in 2006. He says, the world is watching what we do today in America. They will know what we do here today, and they will treat all of us accordingly in the future, our soldiers, our diplomats, our journalists, anybody who travels beyond these borders. I hope we remember this as we go forward. I sincerely hope that we can protect what has been called the Great Writ, a writ that has been in place in the Anglo-American legal system for over 700 years. And he goes on and on and on with more from Barack Obama.
Yeah, but what does he know?
Well, first of all, he's a racist. He used context.
Right.
So we know that right off the bat.
So we should dismiss him immediately.
We should.
Oh, my gosh. The stupidity of people. At this point, it is self-imposed stupidity. It really is.
I just, especially if you're a U.S. senator,
mm-hmm.
I can understand the average dolt, right? That's on Twitter.
Oh, this is an insult. Do not go here because this is an insult to the average dolt.
Well, it's
if
true.
If you're gonna say the average dolt, you know, doesn't know this, but senators should. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you don't commonly, if you're not a lawyer
yeah.
and you have no legal background, you don't mm-hmm. commonly hear the mm-hmm. word Anglo-American tossed around all that often
mm-hmm.
these days.
Mm-hmm.
However,
mm-hmm.
if you're a U.S. senator
yes.
and you're about to make this the basis of your big racial attack against the administration,
right.
do you not take a moment to ask a lawyer to look it up to see if Barack Obama maybe uttered it multiple times? Do you do any research,
no.
any thought put
no.
into it before
no.
you just start typing?
No.
And again, we.
You know why?
He is not the only person, the only politician who tweets things that they should think about before they tweet them. I'm not
right.
saying.
Right.
But it is amazing that you would not take that step.
But do you know why people tweet things that are like this?
I do not.
Because they know that we won't look it up. The average
yeah.
American doesn't care. If you agree with that politician, whatever they say is absolutely right.
I suppose, but when you're the last president of your party, the last president of your party said he wanted to create a balanced process that, quote, adheres to the rule of law, habeas corpus, and basic principles of Anglo-American the Anglo-American legal system, but doing it in a way that doesn't result in releasing people who are intent on blowing us up, end quote. You think that with a guy who is supposedly this constitutional genius who is just in office, you think maybe you look into it for a second. For a second.
Mm.
I'm not saying you have to understand.
No.
You don't have to go to law school. Just take a moment to think about what you're doing. Because I know it's so easy to call this guy.
Why should senators be any different than the rest of us?
Well, I mean, I guess they shouldn't. We all should do it, though. We all should take time. This is why people get annoyed with us. And we did this with the Susan Rice thing just a few moments ago. Susan Rice, look, that email looks terrible to me. But I want to take time and make sure I understand why she sent it. I want to hear her side of it. I want to hear both. Because I don't want to just go run out and accuse people of things until I have the information.
Isn't it cute? Do you remember when the world was like this?
It should be like that. Oh, in the old days,
Glenn. The old days.
Back in the old days when we used to take 14 seconds before we accused someone of being a racist.
One of the great things we get out of our free market economy is innovation. We take things that have been around for a long time, these big, giant TVs that have took up half your living room, and now they hang on the wall. They're nice and flat, and the picture's better, and they take up less energy. It's what we do here in the United States of America. WaxRx is a good example of this. The WaxRx system said, okay, well, people have been using Q-tips for a while. Q-tip doesn't even recommend you use these things to clean your inner ear. If you look at the box, it's not even among their suggested uses. What if we come up with something better? What if we come up with something that actually works? The WaxRx system is the same system physicians used in their offices to clean your ears. The WaxRx system uses special wax softening drops to break down earwax inside the ear, and it's got a pump with a special tip that gently delivers the perfect amount of cleansing pressure to flush the wax away. This is the new way of doing things. Go to usewaxrx.com. Usewaxrx.com and order your reusable ear wash system today. Use offer code radio to get the free shipping. Usewaxrx.com.
Glenn Beck.
So, Stu, have you been following the Olympics from P.F. Chang's?
I didn't. I thought it was further away than P.F.
No, it's
Chang's.
Actually P.F. Chang's. I learned that from WLS in Chicago.
Yeah.
They were running the highlights of the Olympics live from P.F. Chang's.
And, it's a problem.
That's, yeah, it is.
Somebody thought that was going to be funny, I think. And I will say they were right.
Yes.
But perhaps not the best idea.
Right. Not for the local news.
Is it true? Which events are being held near the Great Wall of Chocolate? Because I maintain that is the greatest name for a dessert in history.
I'm trying to get a seat there at the Olympics at PF Chang's really? For tomorrow night. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
There, it's a lot cheaper than I realize.
Everybody says it's such a big deal to travel over, and it's not. It's not. It's right there, right by the mall. So
their excuse for this was pretty interesting too. They said that someone had made a parody for private use, and they mistakenly used that.
Yeah, they made it
graphic
for something for the sports guy as a joke, and then they just left it in the machine. And so on Monday morning, they come in to do the update, and they see the Olympic. They see the Olympic, the logo, and nobody notices that it doesn't actually say the city that it's held in North Korea. It just says P.F. Chang's 2012.
Which I guess is, the insinuation there is that's racist or something because he just put
it. Oh, dear God, I didn't even go there. Really? Now,
oh, really?
Really?
What
no.
did you think it was?
Just
all
some.
Don't try to add context because then you also will be a racist. That's the belief is that, someone, they just did the as close as they could get to being familiar with Asian culture was P.F. Chang's. So they threw that in there because they thought it would be funny. Because it sounds, the word kind of sounds like P.F. Chang's. That's the
insinuation. That's what I was going for, was just that it sounds a little like P.F. Chang's, except it's a little easier to say.
It is a little easier to say.
Yeah.
But usually when this is a rule, this is a general rule, and I don't know that it's right. hard and fast, but when you take a foreign sounding word and you simplify it to a nearby restaurant that serves similar food, you usually get in trouble. That's just a generality. Usually you shouldn't go that way because people take that as the only thing you care about from that culture is the food or something. I don't know. This is everyone gets offended by everything. This is why I like living my life.
Really, when I think of Korea, I think of two things: hate the dictator, love the food.
Yeah, are you on the Korean barbecue thing?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it.
Have you not?
Have you gone?
It's not really going to be my thing. I mean,
how do you know?
Well, because I don't eat meat, so I don't. Korean barbecue is going to be largely that. Made of
meat.
I will say that they have now I'm talking about, this is authentic, and this might be a little bit weird for the average person to understand because if you're not in the world of Korean barbecue, you might not understand this. But I went to Cheesecake Factory the other day, Cheesecake Factory now has Korean cauliflower or something fried. I don't know what it is, but it's freaking really good. It's really, really
good.
Is it
like cauliflower rice?
No, it's like cauliflower, and I think they fry it, and they put some sort of Korean seasoning on it.
I don't know.
And then you can put it over rice.
Yeah,
it's delicious. And Cheesecake Factory is authentic Korean. If you don't know that, a lot of people think cheesecake doesn't sound.
No, it's not authentic.
Doesn't sound like it.
No, it's not authentic.
But they have the cauliflower on the menu. You can get it anytime.
I don't think that's authentic.
And it's actually directly.
I'll take you to an authentic, right down the street. Because here in Dallas, we have a whole Korean section of town, and the restaurants are unbelievable.
This is a wider conversation. And that I like ethnic food from different countries of the world. But what I want is the American version of that food. I don't want authentic.
No.
I want you to take your authentic food and I want you to hide it away from me. Because I've been to authentic Mexican restaurants. And I love Mexican food. I love it. But then I go there and I'm like, why am I not at Taco Bell again? Because it's a lot cheaper
you
than
are
this.
So
wait. You know what? I want to go to Uncle Julio's or the border.
No, that's not.
And that's what I want.
Yeah,
I want Americanized ethnic foods. Mm. That is, I think, the real goal of America. It was developed here and it's become popular. Like I'm sure if I went to Italy, the food would be good. But I like the food. I like Italian food in America.
I went to a Chinese restaurant, and I went with a friend who has a Chinese mother-in-law. Okay, really Chinese, and she was like, she had a restaurant, so she comes over to America, and they walk into
Panda Express.
Panda Express.
Uh-huh. Authentic Chinese.
Authentic. walks in. They're driving across the country. They see a Panda Express. He's like, okay, we'll get some Chinese food. She walks in. He said she stopped at the door and was like, good God, what is this? And she looked behind the counter and she said, there are no Chinese people here. We are not eating here.
Yeah, that's sad.
I think that was, I thought Panda Express was authentic. I really. Well,
if you go into the real, like the real, you know, hole in the walls in Mexico, what you will find there are the nacho fries that they serve at Taco Bell. That is authentic. And the same thing goes for Panda Express. Orange chicken all over the place in Beijing. You're going to get. That's.
Didn't know
the
that.
The main thing you can have
Did
is orange chicken.
Did not know that.
You need to learn.
Beck. Mercury.